Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no lanes on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no lanes on the track when we.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
I look like I'm wrecked. I just looked at myself in the camera. I'm exhausted. We just did a full day of school, had wrestling practice, did a broadcast for our basketball game. I'm exhausted. How's your balls?
They're swollen and tender. They're so huge right now, they're like protruding through my shorts. It's unbelievable. I've never had this problem before.
So tell us, because we didn't even get in this conversation, why did you need your balls worked on?
I had a vein in my balls, like it was a varicose vein, and I guess it was like blocking my boys a little bit, and because I'm 40 now, I'm getting checked out for testosterone, getting checked out for all kinds of stuff, and then I went to the urologist. And got checked out there, and pulled my pants down. She checked my balls and said, "Yep, we got a varicose vein here. That's probably causing you some issues. I can real quick. I can go in there. 45 minutes. I can fix that thing." And so I was like, "Okay." So we made the appointment. And my appointment was yesterday, and I get in there, and you know, I had had a meeting with the anesthesiologist, and they said, "You're going to do general anesthesia." Now I don't know why I thought this when they said it at first. I thought that was going to be a local anesthetic. I thought that they were just going to, you know, give me like a numbing shot, you know, and then go do the deal. I was, though, in my head, it was kind of like a similar procedure to a vasectomy, just the opposite, right? So I go in there and they hook me up to an IV and they go, "Oh no, we're putting you out. There's no way you could be awake for this." I was like, "Really?" They go, "Yeah, nobody told you that?" And I was like, "No, can I talk to my doctor?" My doctor comes in. She goes, "Well, Mike, I told you that it was general anesthesia." I was like, "I thought that meant I was getting a shot, not going under." She goes, "No, we have to put you under. Like, we're gonna cut into your groin and stick a tube down in there and go through into your ball sack and fix your vein." I was like, and then we have to have like a camera, like some type of camera thing, a scope or whatever. And I was like, "Oh my gosh." So they and I was like, "Well, what are you guys giving me?" They go, "Oh, fentanyl." I'm like, "Oh, the thing that's killing everybody." Okay. So yeah, they gave me that and they gave me some gas, and then I woke up and I think they gave me an extra heaping dose of it, because I was in quite a bit of pain when I woke up. But I'm doing fine now, except for like the swelling is just out of this world. So I have to I'm taking a break from ice in my ball sack to do this podcast.
I can't bitch about being tired.
I've literally been in my recliner all day with ice on my balls.
My balls are fine. So I gotta gotta just move on with the show. I'm sleepy.
Yeah. Well, if you guys are wondering, I think my sperm will be swimming like Michael Phelps here pretty soon with his new surgery. So probably another little Gilbert running around here pretty soon. I think that's the idea. I think that's the idea. Yeah.
You're a madman. You're gonna have another kid at 41-ish.
I'm 40, damn it. We'll see.
Well, I'm just doing math here. Best case scenario, he shows up when you're 41.
Yeah, that's what it was looking like. But you know, 40 is the new 30, or at least that's what people tell me anyway.
What I'm hearing. So, I'll be 44 in February, so it's like, ugh.
I don't know. I feel every bit of 40, especially right now with the way that I'm walking.
Oh, I believe that.
But I feel, hey, thanks.
Some days feel young. I was saying some days I feel young, like I can go, like I can still, like I still beat the snots out of the kids when we're wrestling and stuff like that. We had a college kid come in last year, and I was neck and neck still, and I'm like, I still feel good. And then it's some days I'm like, dude, what is this thing on me? Why is this thing growing on me? Like stuff like that. It's like, yeah, when you hit 40, stupid stuff starts happening to you. Like my lower back is sore. I mean, my balls are fine, but my lower back is sore. You know? Yeah.
Getting old sucks. It really is the worst. But hey guys, thanks everybody for joining us. You know, I had earlier today, I had some topics and I was just like, the topics are a little bit boring. Thankfully, our man, the guy who's really been our lead story and probably most, like he's taken the top spot on our podcast the most, that is one Mr. CM Punk. He made his long-awaited return to SmackDown tonight, and I watched his promo. I thought it was a good promo, and according to my timeline, everybody mostly enjoyed it, and I think that it's a consensus that it was a step above his Raw promo from a couple weeks ago, but it's still probably not your most favorite CM Punk promo.
It's half-assed. It's half-hearted. He's calling the Sensari Astro was trying to eat Andy's lightsaber, the one I paid $300 for. So I had to pry that out of his mouth. He's half-hearted, half-assed. You know, he took one. Ooh, I punched a guy in the locker room, and the crowd went, "Huh?"
They didn't get it. They didn't get it.
Because WWE fans only. This is what I've been saying for weeks, man. WWE fans only watch WWE, and Tony Khan would sell his mother. Yeah, I know what I said. To get more WWE fans watching his show, and they don't care, man. They just don't care, right? And it looks like CM Punk doesn't care either. And I got jokingly put in our group chat. I'm like, the eyes, Chico, they never lie.
You know what? I was a little higher on the promo than you are. I thought I was fine. His eyes look normal to me, like they just look like normal eyes. But I think you probably are paying more attention than I am. I was just like. I just pulled the video up on my phone. I was like, oh yeah, this is actually a way better promo. He had a little bit more fire, but that joke that he told, the AEW references, when he hit the line, he was setting it up for a little while too. And I kind of at this point knew where he was going with it. And then he hits the line and nobody cared. It was the weirdest thing. It reminded me of the Bobby Fish thing of the, where's the lie? Where's the lie? Yeah. I was like, God damn. You know, he got a lot of CM Punk chants. Like, they still liked him, right? He was still over with the crowd, but some of the lines just, or that was really the only line that I felt like didn't hit. But, you know, he went after Roman Reigns a little bit and the crowd got into it. He talked about his history with Heyman. Crowd got into it. So I think he's going to be fine, but he's not going to be, it's not your grandpa CM Punk, right? It's not, it's not the one that we loved.
Yeah, he'll be fine. But it's like, the fire, I joke, I also say, you know, this fire does not burn or no longer burns. Like, he just seems like a guy there, right? Like, he's over, but I mean, like, I don't even think he's as over as LA Knight.
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I don't know. He was getting a ton of chance. And then every time they did a backstage segment, because they all, like, you don't have to watch SmackDown, by the way. You can just scroll through the timeline and everything is clipped for Twitter. Every time he appeared on screen, and even he appeared on screen with Randy Orton and Eli, almost calling him Eli Drake, but LA Knight, Randy Orton looks like the hugest man in the world standing next to both those guys. I always thought LA Knight was a really big guy. He is like a cruiserweight standing next to Orton. Orton's huge, man. But I felt like, you know, like as soon as they panned over to Punk in that shot, you know, they always do their close-up of Orton, and then they pan over to LA Knight, and then here comes CM Punk into the screen. CM Punk got the biggest pop of them all, right? Like, he's still a big star.
He's a big star, no doubt. But Randy Orton is also the size of like a WWE, like a WWF wrestler.
Yeah.
He's probably doing some of the same stuff that they were too. So
I don't think that the wellness policy applies to guys Randy Orton's age at this point.
Has the wellness policy ever applied to Randy Orton? Really?
Well, he had those violations, but I think that he did so much in the past that it permanently jacked up his system. They were like, well, you kind of have to do it now. Like,
there might be some. If you don't, you're not going to be functioning. Yeah, there might be some truth to that. But he's bigger than he's ever been right now.
Yeah,
he's absolutely enormous. Like,
it reminded me of when Triple H came back from his quad tear back in the day.
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. Except Triple H wasn't 44. He's old, but he looks amazing. Like, he's, because remember, we had like mid-2000s, Randy Orton was like, when he was failing those wellness policies, he was juiced out, but I don't think he was this jacked. Like, he looks like the slim Orton that we've known for a long time, but like huge.
Like, yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, Joe says they had to change their weed policy because they had to suspend Orton so many times. Yeah.
Dan likes his weed.
And good for him. Good for him. Whatever it takes to get by. But man, so speaking of WWE, my original top story, and I thought this was something interesting because I felt like, you know, we had some conversations with some of our friends in the media. You know, we were, you know, is it possible? Is it not possible? But Okada going to WWE seems to really be picking up. And did you get a chance to read the Observer today at all?
I did.
Yeah. And so, So last week, Dave brought up that WWE was, you know, interested in Okada. Kind of a line that he just threw out there because he's always interested. And then Sapp runs a story about it. And then, you know, Dave says, well, they're always interested. And his contract, everybody's contract is up, you know, after February 1st, 2024, same as Will Ospreay, right? Well, it just seemed like they're even more interested than ever before, and they're making a big push. And it looks like Okada might also be interested in going there. And that would be the first time that there's ever been expressed interest.
I don't know if they're as interested so much as Okada is interested. Like, and it seems like he's just interested in an American company now too, because the talk is he's interested in the other place as well. So there's a lot of factors, I think, to take into consideration here. I think what's happening is he saw what Will Ospreay is getting to go to AEW and says, work circles around him. Where's my money? Right. I know people like to get all geeked up about this stuff, but I don't think this is a done deal by any stretch of the imagination to either company, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to leverage New Japan for more money, which is what Ospreay did. Ospreay pretty much told you, right? Oh, I was going to AEW the whole time. I got the tattoo. Like, but he hired Barry Bloom to leverage Tony Khan out of as much money as possible. I think that Okada is trying to leverage Bushiroad. His wife's a major star over there. Like, she does voiceover work. She's an actress. She's got her own career. They have young kids. Uprooting them and moving them to a different country with a completely different culture is a big change. I know we could say, well, Nakamura did it. I mean, they're different guys. Nakamura was part of the Three Musketeers, you know, with Okada and Tanahashi. It's different with Okada. Okada is the guy. Like, and Dave put this in the Observatory too. It's interesting. No lead Japanese stars ever left for the U.S. Like Muda had a big run in WCW, but he, you know, that was an excursion basically, right? He came back as the Great Muda and was a main eventer when he returned. He didn't leave a main eventer. This would be the only guys who are done closest is Nakamura. Coincidentally, he's getting a push now. Yeah. I don't know.
I was just saying, when Nakamura came, he was 36, right? Mm-hmm. So similar, but Nakamura was a top guy for New Japan, but he was like, it was like Okada, Tanahashi, and then Nakamura, three, and the Naito was like, you know, on the up and coming when Nakamura came over. So he was like number three of three, right? So he wasn't like the exact top guy. There were two guys ahead of him whenever he left. So I just want to put that into context because people will say, oh, well, Nakamura came over. Well, Nakamura was in a little bit of a different spot.
Yeah. Nakamura was the Intercontinental Champ. And the Intercontinental Champ, it wasn't interchangeable with the IWGP title. It's it was like a 1A title. It's definitely treated higher than either the TNT or the Intercontinental and WWE belt is. Like, people say, well, Gunther. I mean, Gunther's having a great run, don't get me wrong, but Nakamura's selling out shows on his own. Like, Nakamura is Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, it was a big, I remember 2016 when he signed with WWE. It was him and AJ and the the Money Grubbin brothers. Like, he, it was a big, massive deal. And Okada leaving would be an even bigger deal. I just don't know if it's going to happen. Like, I think he's just leveraging Bushiroad. That's what I feel.
I don't see him leaving either, because of all the reasons that you had stated. And the least important reason is that he's the top guy in New Japan. Top guys don't leave New Japan. I think of the reasons you stated, I think that's the least important. I think the most important is he's got a family with young kids, and his wife has a whole career. Could AEW sign him? I think that he could. They could. I don't see that either. I think he's just going to end up staying with New Japan, and then maybe he'll take some more U.S. dates and try to get some more big money dates in the U.S. And maybe that's something that they do, where, like, you know, Tony Khan is able to hook him up. But
it's kind of what I was thinking. You know, maybe they could leverage Tony, be like, hey man, we'll give you guys X amount of dates on Okada if you could help us keep him here. And I think I think that Tony Khan signing Kazuchika Okada would be a mistake. I think the moment he's signed, he becomes less special. Like, what makes Okada cool here is the fact that he comes and goes, right? And we don't have enough of that in wrestling. We don't have enough of attractions. The term attraction gets thrown around. Andre the Giant in the territory days was an attraction because he would come into the territory for a big reason, do his business, and then go somewhere else, everywhere. There's not enough guys like that in pro wrestling anymore. I don't think there's many, really. Like, who would you call an attraction like that in this day and age?
I mean, the closest thing is Lesnar, right? Like, but he doesn't go to territory to territory. Yeah. He just comes in and out of WWE. But, like, that would be the closest. I think Matt Cardona's trying to do that on the indies.
I think Suzuki, like, probably came the closest.
Yeah,
Suzuki, but it's not It's not a lower scale. Like,
Because Suzuki's not coming into New Japan and popping the territory and then going to All Japan and popping the territory. Like,
right.
Suzuki's coming in. He's awesome. He's having cool matches, but he's not like a super special attraction that people are coming out to see, you know?
In the US he is, right? But not like me. Yeah. Like, he's not main eventing AEW, but when he comes into like a GCW, he sells tickets. Like,
well, I think he did a couple years ago. I think he did.
Not now.
He came way too often.
I agree with that.
About now, right?
Because we don't have territories anymore. Like, we don't have places where people can stay fresh. I think Randy Orton's biggest achievement is being able to stay over for basically being in the spotlight for 20 years nonstop.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah. That's impressive. Like, that's probably the biggest notch of his career, I think. It's all hard, man. It's hard to get over the first time around, let alone staying consistently over. That's kudos to him on that. But I mean, like, I think that it behooves AEW to make sure Kazuchika Okada stays the guy in Japan, because then you have a draw for your shows when you do your Wrestle Dreams and Forbidden Doors and the whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something else we didn't talk about is the dollar versus the yen right now. The yen is in the shitter.
Like, I got some friends living in Japan that are not happy.
So, I believe thankfully, that.
I would say it's the opposite. So, like, I have some friends that live there, and they live off base, and because the yen is down, like, they're trying to charge them more money, but the American dollar is up, so they're trying to, you know, so it's they're making up for it because the American dollar is up, and now they're trying to cut the cost of living allowance that my friends are getting over there. They just cut our cost of living allowance here, the government, even though everything in Hawaii is up right now, but because in Japan it's down, we're part of this whole system called the Pacific Air Forces. It's a whole bureaucratic thing. Anyway, we're like, I'm feeling the effects of the yen being down, believe it or not. It's weird.
There's so much fluidity between Japan and Hawaii, right? And I don't know if I don't know if mainland Americans realize that, because it's a stopover, right? It's halfway basically between Japan and America, which is why World War II and all. So, like, it's a good spot. So, I mean, it's a good spot to see, a lot of ton of Japanese people in Hawaii, same as a ton of, like, mainland American people. So, I mean, like, it does not surprise me that the economies are so intertwined over there. Basically,
well, I just mean we're interconnected militarily.
I think it's more than that, though. I think there is some. Yeah. I think you do. I think it goes beyond the militarily stuff. I think it's actually more embedded in the national or the regional economy there, I should say.
Yeah.
So basically, Bushiroad got a pony up for Okada, because you don't want that.
They, They do. And as much as I like their new Three Musketeers, they're not ready to replace Okada yet. They're just not. Maybe one day, like Yoda Tsuji, I think we can all agree is, you know, pretty insane. Ren Narita is fantastic. Shota Umino is fantastic. And my guy, Impact legend, Yuya Uemura, on the up and coming there. He's not a part of that Three Amigos thing, but or the Three Musketeers, Three Amigos.
I much prefer calling them the Three Amigos to differentiate them. That's way funnier.
Yeah, you know, I think the Three Amigos would be way better now that I think about
way better. You know, that's a guilty pleasure movie of mine. I actually like the Three Amigos. I think it's funny.
That is not a guilty pleasure of mine at all. I'm fucking proud that I love that movie. That movie is tremendous. It is the stupidest movie, but every time it comes on, I have to sit there and watch it. It's so good.
It's dude, I know Chevy Chase just kind of farts his way through it because he never took anything seriously. But Martin Short and Steve Martin, Steve Jesus Martin. Christ, yeah, it's late Steve tonight. Martin. Are so good in that movie and are so damn funny. Hey, I got a movie for you.
Yeah.
I saw a movie this weekend that shocked me at how good it was.
Oh, tell me. I know what you're talking about, but go ahead and tell the people because I want to go see it.
Godzilla Minus One.
I'm looking forward to it.
Dude, so my kid loves Godzilla.
You and a lot of people have been telling me the same thing. So,
all right. So here's the deal. My kid loves Godzilla. Loves him. And so did I as a kid. Big monster destroying Tokyo. What's not to love? And I always joke that the worst part of the Godzilla movies are the damn human scenes, because who cares what these humans have to think? I just want to watch monsters destroying shit, right? So I brought this into that movie. I said, oh, we'll go see it. We had to review it for Superhero Speak. So I'm like, all right, I'll go watch this movie. It should be fun. Mike, they put a real movie together. This is the story. This is the story of a failed kamikaze pilot. When I say failed, I mean, this guy lands on Edo Island and is like, oh, my plane doesn't work. And they're like, your plane is fine. No, it's not fine. Something's wrong with it. And these mechanics are trying to work on the plane. And oh, shit, there's Godzilla on this island. But Godzilla is only like two stories tall. He's not big. He's big enough to fuck a lot of shit up, but he's not like enormous, right? And the guy gets in the plane to gun down Godzilla. He doesn't think it's going to work, and he can't pull the trigger, right? So then he's like shamed publicly because Godzilla kills a bunch of mechanics, right? And then he goes back to Tokyo, right? And everything is destroyed. Everything's burnt out. Like, his parents are dead. Everyone's dead. And he just feels like he's miserable. And he meets this girl and her daughter, and he falls in love, but he can't like give himself to this girl because he's still fighting the war in his head, man. And like, he gets a job detonating mines, U.S. and Japanese mines in the water. And they got to go in a wooden boat because they're magnetic mines. And while they're there, what do they see? Fucking Godzilla again. But this time he's been mutated by the Bikini Island tests and he's enormous. I'm like, we got to stop him. And they put a mine in his mouth and explodes.
JD, you're not going to spoil the whole thing, are you? Because
I'm going to spoil the whole movie.
I don't want us to get a bunch of hate comments.
Dude, this movie, it's got 1 week left before they pull it to theaters. So if you don't see it now, you're not going to see it. Here's the thing. This is a love story. I'm going to cut to the chase. This is a love story. This works. Right. This is a story about a guy who can't let go of his ultimate failure and falls in love. And like, then his wife, something bad happens. And then he's got to be a kamikaze again. And it's this innately Japanese film of how the samurai culture is constantly at war with the idea of trying to live. And that's the whole idea of the movie is, do we embrace the Bushido, the seppuku method, or do we try to start anew and live again? Set against the background of this monster destroying Tokyo.
Yeah.
It's unlike, it has no business being as good as it is. None. Well, it's my favorite movie of the year.
I'm sold. I'm absolutely sold. And we got Mel G in the chat. Mel, you saw Barbie. I have not seen Barbie and I don't think I'm ever going to watch it. Now look, and people that like to watch Barbie, I'm cool. No problem. But when it comes to the movies that I like, I'm about as toxically male as it gets. I want to see Stallone fucking shit up. I want to see people telling mean jokes, right? I want to see explosions, jokes, all that. I want raunchy stuff. Barbie, not for me. Not a Mike Gilbert movie.
I'm less meathead than Mike. Not much, but less. I have a film degree, so I plan on seeing Barbie, but that's a Michelle movie, not a JD movie. So if she wants to watch a movie, we wait till it's available on streaming. If I want to see a movie, I go to the theater to see it immediately because I'm a, I mean, I'm a theater junkie. I love going to the movie theater. She doesn't like, she'll go see the Marvel movies at a theater because she thinks the, she likes the spectacle of those movies. Yeah. She likes those movies, but we decide we've already committed that when Barbie is on streaming, because Andy, I'm not watching Barbie. I've got a 7-year old. You can't question his masculinity right now. So we'll see it. I haven't seen it yet, but good things, but I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think it's going to have the heart of Godzilla minus one. I can't believe I just said that.
Well, not many things are going to be as good as Godzilla minus one. Iron Claw getting some rave reviews, man. And some friends of mine went and saw it in the theater because it's out. And then I actually checked. It was here in Hawaii yesterday, and it's already gone. It's going to be gone for 2 weeks. They did a pre-screening all over, and I think part of AMC Theater or something like that.
They do that so they can get an Oscar contention for the year. Right. Yeah. They do this a lot with those movies. They give them a quick release so they can say this movie came out this year, so it can get a little bit of the Oscar buzz going. I know there was a bad review that Dave had posted of it. Someone had saw it, and my vibe was it wasn't 100% historically accurate. So then Dave kind of shit on it a little bit, and that became the narrative. But every like real film person that I've heard from is like, this is an amazing piece of film. And I am so excited to see the Iron Claw.
Me too. And I got to give some advice to people that are hardcore wrestling fans that probably know that story pretty well, like you and I. Did you listen to the Lapsed Fan cover it? It was so good. In depth. They did the lamentable tragedy of World Class Championship Wrestling. I saw the Heroes of World Class documentary, saw the WWE documentary, saw the Vice documentary. I love this story, but when you go watch the movie, it's not going to be 100% accurate because they have to crunch it down to about a 2-hour time period, and then they got to sell it to Hollywood. And most of Hollywood does not care about the true story, right? So some of it is going to be Hollywoodized, and you got to just get over it. That's what happens with these movies. And some people just can't seem to wrap their brains around the fact this is a movie and not a documentary. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, here, okay. Most documentaries aren't. Documentary is not journalism. Right. Yeah. All documentarians are telling a story, and not 100% of the real story makes it to any documentary. That's just the nature of storytelling. And when you're telling a story, real life doesn't follow the beats of a story. It just doesn't, which is why real life sucks. The movies are better. So, I mean, like, it's not going to work that way. Yes, they cut Chris Von Erich because, let's be honest, Chris Von Erich didn't matter. It was just the icing on the tragedy cake. I mean, like,
Chris Von Erich.
That's accurate, actually. Fritz did not care about Chris Von Erich. And, like, I think, oh, there's another brother that dies. Come on, that's too much. I mean, like, it's going to get Mike, right? And Carrie. And that's, like, plenty. That's plenty of death in a film. Like,
apparently they cut Lance Von Erich out of it. So old MJF didn't make the final cut.
Can I be honest with you? I'm shocked they had Lance Von Erich in it.
I don't know why they would have had, because he was such an unimportant, like, nothing part of that story.
Well,
I got what they were trying to do, because they were trying to, you know, they wanted to bring in a Lance, you know, like a Von Erich cousin. It was supposed to be Waldo's son. It just didn't work, but it really doesn't have anything to do with the tragedy of the story.
I think they brought him in. So they bring in Lance when Carrie loses the foot, right? I don't know. Maybe some people, listeners, don't know that. Carrie Von Erich, when you saw Carrie Von Erich as the Texas Tornado in WWF in the early 90s, he didn't have a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's this famous angle, and I think it's with Colonel De Beers, and this is, I forget if it's Pope. No, yeah, it was pre-WWE. Colonel De Beers rips Carrie's boot off, and everybody's like, holy shit, it's a real thing. It's the first time you saw that Carrie had one foot. Carrie lost his leg or his foot in a motorcycle accident, and they surgically repaired the foot, and he was all fucked up on drugs while he was recovering in the hospital, and saw there was a burger on the table, got up to get the burger and crushed his foot again, and they had to amputate it. So the Carrie Von Erich that we all saw, that most people saw, was wrestling with one freaking foot, which just goes to show you how really great Carrie Von Erich was, which is why he was so much more nimble when he was, you know, in Texas and stuff like that than when he finally got there. So I think the Lance comes in when Carrie, I believe Lance comes in when Carrie's hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could, or either when Carrie's hurt and when Mike when they trotted out Mike, whose brain had almost basically been fried from toxic shock syndrome. God, this movie's going to be hard to watch.
It is, man. It is. Transferring heat in the chat. Our boy, he says, accident happened in 1986. Yeah, I think that's right.
It is right.
Without actually going to look it up, I think I'm pretty sure that's right.
And I'm pretty sure that's when Lance comes in. It's 86.
Yeah.
Because at this point, the territory is on its ass. Like 83, there's not a hotter territory than WCCW. And we're going to watch that. It's Mike and I are going to do a watch on Christmas Star Wars from 83. It's going to be awesome. 84, they're still pretty hot. After that, it starts to slip.
Well, so David dies in 84, right?
84.
But Kerry wins the world title, but then he gives it right back. And then Kerry starts slipping. Right. And then he ends up, it was just tragedy after tragedy. Because it wasn't just the Von Erich brothers dying, like Gino Hernandez died and like other guys in the territory died. So if you guys have not watched the Heroes of World Class that's out there, I think you can get it on Amazon. Really, really good documentary out there.
Gino's in the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to have Gino. I think, I think. He's another guy that just died, like gets real hot and then dies, you know. It's like, oh, what a fucking
he would have been a perfect like long-term foil for them, because him and Chris Adams had just formed, they were really hot as the dynamic duo tag team. Dude, you know how fucked up the WCCW was when before Gino dies, they do this angle where Chris, you know, the blind angle, they blinded Chris Adams, right? So this is, they're setting up the dynamic duo feud of Chris Adams and Gino, and Gino dies. And then they have the audacity to go on and say, we've had two tragedies, the death of Gino Hernandez and the blinding of Chris Adams. And it's like, good God, Fritz has zero conscience, which is why this movie is going to be amazing. Cause they're going to show you what a piece of shit Fritz Von Erich truly was. Like it's so fucked up.
Yeah. God, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy playing him, he's a really good actor. I saw him in, he was in a boxing TV show that was on FX back in the day, but the guy's really, really good. Speaking of the Von Erichs, they're going to be in AEW this coming up Tuesday. I think you called it right here on the show that the Von Erichs would be in around Christmas time. And sure enough, their winter's coming. It's in Dallas. And we got Kevin and Marshall and Ross coming in, man. Probably a one night only deal, though, huh?
Mike, if you were struggling to sell tickets like AEW is struggling to sell tickets, and you run the Texas market as frequently as AEW runs the Texas markets, you'd think that maybe they would hype this a little bit. You would think that maybe they'd show the Iron Claw trailer during. You would think that they would have Max talking about, he's on the show fucking 10 other times talking about nothingness. You think you talk about the movie he's credited as an executive producer on. You'd think you do one of your awesome hype packages that you just fired the guy who makes all those. You'd think you try to get people excited. Even if, here's the big secret, Ross and Marshall really aren't that great, but they have a presence, they have an aura. You'd think you'd want to hype this to like make sure people watch, make sure people buy tickets, but in classic AEW fashion, you throw a graphic and say, next week, the Von Erichs.
Yeah, don't you dare miss it.
Exactly.
You know what? They really are underselling it. And I think that might get reflected in the ticket sales. I think they're probably not hyping it because this is only going to be a one-time deal. I don't think they're interested in bringing in the volunteer. Yeah. Well, I mean, they should have did what they did with Mystico, right? They should have called up Court Bauer, got some footage. TNA's got a little bit of footage on these guys where they were in Texas.
Noah does.
Kevin doing the claw. Yeah, no, Noah does. So there's footage out there they could get. They should hype the shit out of it and, you know, and give them a couple of, you know, jobbers to beat up and then send the crowd home happy. Let Kevin do the claw.
The movie's an A24 movie, so it's not even a big studio thing. So, I mean, you can easily get A24 to give you some stuff and go, hey, you're going to promote our movie? Great. It's a low-budget film. Like,
in the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value a complete view of all possible cards and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y UFY Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Just this company is so stupid about it's like every, I feel like we have this conversation all the time, and they're going to do some BOGOs. They're going to put 4,000 in the building people, and they're going to be like, "Oh wow, what a great job! AEW selling tickets again." Like they trip over dollars to pick up dimes constantly. Like it's just Tony Khan has completely lost sight of how to hype these shows. A24 just signed a deal with WWE streaming rights. So it's right. No, thanks, Joe.
Yeah, it's right there.
I had no idea about that. Like that's even worse. Get the fucking trailer on your show. Hype this. Get people to see the movie. It's a goddamn wrestling movie that your world champion is in and is an executive producer of. What are we doing? Why is this so difficult? I don't understand. Max has got to be in 18 fucking segments of show. But you can't hype the one thing that's interesting right now. We got to have Roddy Strong screaming at him and all that dumb shit. God, I hate that company.
He's moved to shouting Renee now, Roddy Strong.
At least it's different.
Yeah. You know, say a little bit of positivity about AEW, I thought. Or people are saying that Daniel Garcia and Brian Danielson had a great match. So.
Oh, wow. When you let good wrestlers have good matches, that happens. Maybe we've got to put Sky Blue in another match. She's only worked once this week.
Isn't Sky Blue in Final Battle coming up against Athena? Isn't that what they went with? Or who's facing Billy Athena?
Billy Starks. The actual good young wrestler they have. She's actually good. Billy Starks actually is pretty good. Like Sky Blue is she's fucking terrible. Like she is absolutely terrible. And I get she's great looking. I get why they have her on TV, but she's had more matches than anybody else in AEW this year. Wow.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. I don't get it, man. I typically skip those segments, to be honest with you. Got some more notes here. This is pretty cool. Speaking of hell freezing over, and we already talked about Okada and the possibility of him going to WWE, one American company is bringing him into their promotion. Sunday night, January 14th, Las Vegas, Nevada, the Pearl at the Palms. Night after Hard to Kill, TNA presents Snake Eyes, a TNA Impact televised event. Okada coming to TNA, man. After years of being abused by TNA and the Vince Russo, Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff regime calling him Okado, kind of tanking his excursion, he went to New Japan hating TNA for life, and then here he is coming back. Time and money heals all wounds.
Time and money, especially when you got a guy who wants some money, heals all wounds. Here's the question. Do you have Okada, like, do anything with the Okado gimmick? Like, do you have him throw it on the mask? Like, if he could cut a promo, he'd make fun of it. But, I mean, like, I'm sure he would in Japanese, but not in America. It would be lost to the English audience. I mean, like, do you have any reference to the Okado thing if you're TNA?
I think part of what TNA is currently doing and, like, a big part of their new appeal is nostalgia. I think you got to make at least a joke about it, have a heel kind of, like, you know, what I mean? Like,
I got it. Swing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got to do something with it. But
Swinger comes out in the Okado and then eats a Rainmaker.
Yes.
If Nikki was still with the company, that would be him all over. But now it's got to be Swinger.
Yeah. Any chance we get Okada versus Josh Alexander? Maybe. You know, at the same taping, Will Ospreay is also going to be at that taping, and there were rumors of an Ospreay Alexander rematch coming up. So maybe we get Ospreay Alexander, but I'd like to see Okada Alexander. Okada and Alexander were in the same ring for the first time here recently when Josh and the Motor City Machine Guns went to Japan to challenge for the Trios Championships there. So I think we could get something like that. Josh has been losing a lot more. I think they're trying to, you know, build other guys. And so Josh has been doing some jobs lately, and then I'm sure they'll build him back up eventually. But maybe we get Alexander. Maybe we get Okada versus Dolph Ziggler. Who knows? Who knows what's coming up in TNA?
Well, Dolph Ziggler's retiring for 6 to 12 months is what he told everybody. So, you know, far be it from a professional wrestler to lie. You know what the best version of Okada is? I was watching some stuff from the World Tag League. Him and my favorite feud in wrestling is Okada and Kiyomiya. Because Kaito Kiyomiya just brings out this side of Okada that's just the nastiest little fucking dickhead. Like, he's so little brothers Kiyomiya every chance he gets, and he beats his ass, treats him like a turd, kind of like, you know, New Japan treats Noah in general sometimes. Like, it entertains the hell out of me. It's my favorite version of Okada, is just how nasty he is in those.
Yeah, Okada just being a dick to people just tickles me. Transferring, he says TNA ticket sales not very good so far. So the TV tapings were at 280 last we checked. So hopefully Okada and Will Ospreay will help that out. And then the Hard to Kill was just over 500, so they're still not even 50% sold there. So they're gonna have to do something. Yeah, they're gonna have to do something. They're gonna have to get on the ground and do whatever it takes, but they're gonna have to fill out those buildings. Maybe look Las Vegas, maybe there's a Latino market there they can leverage. I don't know, but they gotta do something, man.
Got a bunch of luchadors doing jobs like they always do. I'm just a healthy WWE is not good for wrestling. It's not. Yeah. A rising tide does not lift all ships.
No, because if people want wrestling, it's easier to get WWE. They'll just watch WWE. So, that's the thing. So hopefully some of these announcements and I get the feeling that old Scotty D'Amore and Lou DeAngeli has some tricks up their sleeve for Hard to Kill. They've only announced two matches so far. They got the final resolution on Saturday night, which I'm going to be checking out, and I'll be doing a recap for the site. So lots of TNA stuff coming down the pike. Speaking of TNA, and this is not going to be a TNA heavy show, but I feel like we should talk about it. Deonna Purrazzo, and she's one of a bunch of new free agents that got announced today. First name on the list is Deonna Purrazzo, man. Been here a long time. She's probably accomplished just about everything that you can accomplish in a small promotion. I get the feeling that both AEW and WWE are going to be looking for her as soon as she hits free agency.
I feel like we've had this conversation three or four times.
She's been rumored to be a free agent, but now it's like legit. She's like her last date Saturday.
Well, yeah, but I feel like we've had I feel like you and I have done the epitaph on Deonna Purrazzo's TNA career numerous times. Maybe now we should be well practiced. She's done everything. We said this 2 years ago. She's done everything she could do in Impact. There's nothing more. I get that it's time to do something else. Here's the thing. There's a lot of women in WWE right now.
Yeah.
Right. And there's not a lot of spots in AEW because you get the one match per show.
And that's the killer, right? Like AEW would be a great spot for her because of her style. I think she can have really good matches there.
I agree.
But they just don't put enough women's matches on the show, right? Mm-hmm.
And the women's matches they do put on are oftentimes bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, I got to be a dick when I say that, but a lot of times they're just not very good. Like they have good matches, but
they just don't use them. They put on Sky Blue, who stays the joint out for 15 minutes.
That's right. And Tony's super over right now. Like I cannot say that. I don't hate the gimmick as much as a lot of our brethren do because it's mid card, it's whatever. But like, and if she doesn't wrestle the gimmick, it's fine. When she wrestles the gimmick, it's stupid. But Sky Blue is on the show every fucking week, and she's really bad. And she doesn't have a lot of personality. And I don't understand what they're doing. So if I'm Deonna Purrazzo, I'm like, I don't know. I don't really know. Like, I don't know if there's a lot of spots in WWE at the moment. You know, like.
Yeah.
I don't see it because they're trying to figure out what they're doing with Jade still. And like, there's still
I keep forgetting the Jade's there.
Well, it's funny. I was listening to the flagship with Rich and Joe, and they brought up a good point. Like, WWE was like, all the idiot, the blue check marks on Twitter, your Julian Weekses of the world, were like, day one star in WWE. And they put her on that they had to come out of the Hummer, and she was in a throne. And then they're like, well, she clearly doesn't know how to work. And it's like, oh, but you signed her. So, like, you try to put one over on AEW, but you just paid a lot more for someone that you admit. Like, it's actually... You talk about this a lot with like the Adam Copeland thing. It's like, well, they got him, you know, WWE scammed it, Tony, into spending more money. I kind of think Tony did it a little bit with Jade. Yeah, she'll be a star eventually, you know, but it's like, you got to wait. Like, if they put her in NXT, it's like, okay, well, she's not very good, and we have to admit that. So they have to get her like main roster ready, but everyone keeps telling me that, like, well, you know, she doesn't have to wrestle to be a star in WWE. Well, if that was the case, she'd be on the show now.
She's not doing anything right now.
No, she's not doing anything right now. Well, you know, they're trying to convince us that Brian Pillman is like special. Yeah, I'll know the machine is working when our buddy Salty Scott tells me how great Lexus King truly is, because he just loves eating up the WWE ice cream.
He loves it. Well, he'll believe that he's great when the announcers tell you that he's great, and then he'll.
Vic Joseph says Lexus King has finally come, and then we get this guy is cooking. I stole Joe Lanza's bit there, but that's what's gonna happen.
Hammerstone, I think we've already talked about Hammerstone, but he announced it today, like legit, he's done with MLW. He's becoming a free agent. I don't see AEW in his future. I don't think that he's famous enough and well thought of enough to go to WWE and not do the wellness policy. So I'm thinking TNA. Like I think he's like TNA bound.
I would like that. Hammerstone's good. He'd be a great pickup. Here's my thought though. Like, neither one of us would have pegged Eli Drake as being WWE bound at 39.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's one of the biggest stars in the world. So I wouldn't put them signing anybody.
Nothing would surprise me. I think LA Knight has infinitely more charisma than Hammerstone does. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Absolutely. So, and he's been working a WWE gimmick for a long time. Now, Hammerstone has just been cosplaying Hulk Hogan and Lex Luger for a while. He's just 6 inches shorter than those guys are, but he's doing his best. Yeah, and Joe brings up a good point. Hammerstone and MJF are pretty good friends. I don't know that they're really good friends. I know they were in a faction there at MLW for a little bit. They are? Okay.
I get to interview Hammerstone back when I was a fan sided, and this is when MJF just first started showing up on AEW. He was praising him up and down. MJF always retweets. Okay. Hammer. What I was surprised, the biggest surprise of Hammerstone announcing this is because it, to me, was that Richard Holiday showed back up in MLW. He's taken Hammerstone's spot in the WTF, the World Titan Federation stable.
Yeah.
And Court's completely lost the plot. So I know he was backstage in a couple Dynamite shows. Like, I'm surprised nobody kicked the tires on Richard Holiday.
I felt like his story of beating cancer would have been something that they would have wanted, because he's a good enough wrestler, right? And I think he's a good promo. Fine. He's probably a guy that you would have as a manager, you know, eventually, like a manager that can take some bumps. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is true. He is pretty tall for a manager, but you know, I still think that could have worked, but you know, he's got some charisma. He's got like a little shit heel, kind of a Bobby Davis type manager type of gimmick. You know what I mean? So he does the AirPods. I think that's pretty funny. But
the problem with Holiday in AEW, I always thought would be like, he's so much like MJF, but the MJF character is completely different now. Well, not completely different, but different enough now that maybe, I don't know, man. I could see, well, let's be honest. If Max tells Tony to sign Hammerstone, he's getting signed.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a good move for him. I'd rather see him in TNA.
I think so. Because I feel like, you know, Dave had it in the Observer today that AEW has 142 wrestlers under contract. If they were to hire me to be an executive to run that promotion, the first thing I would do is get rid of about 45. I'd probably shit can about 45 of them, you know, keep my top 100, and then everybody else can just be brought in on certain dates, just like to supplement TV shows. But I'd cut like 45 of them. Sorry, guys. Nobody's producing at a high enough level to be under contract to have that many people under contract. It's ridiculous.
It's not like when Dynamite was only a 2-hour show, they have 5 hours of TV. And I feel like you could be better utilizing that roster, but maybe you can't. I mean, like 142 people to have under contract is a lot. And some of them, like a Megan Bain, who's in Stardom right now, I think you keep her under contract. She's not producing for you right now, but she's on excursion getting better. Yeah. So you keep her. But Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy are bitching about their push right now. And Jeff Hardy almost killed somebody. So,
I'd say bye-bye to the Hardy brothers. And you know who else I'd say bye-bye to? Is Andrade, you know, this guy, transition. That was on my list. He is talking about becoming a free agent. At least it got leaked to the Observer that He thinks he's going to be a free agent soon. Some people think maybe over the summer. Some people think even sooner than that. You know, he's just a guy that's never been happy there. He's just got to go, right?
Did you see the CMLL results from tonight? Andrade is doing a run with CMLL again. I'm not sure if he's La Sombra again there, but he's coming back to CMLL for a brief time. Dave said it could be something permanent. It could be a stop off if he goes back to WWE. Here's the problem with Andrade is I don't think he's going to get pushed in WWE either, because you got the younger, better version of him in Santos Escobar.
Yeah. And well, and I think it would be he would be right where he was when he left WWE before, which is not doing much, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that he's going to be better off in WWE. It was just, he was just a guy that, you know, if he would have just probably had a better attitude in AEW, they might have pushed him more. But, you know, he had that issue with Sammy Guevara where he slapped him and got, and he did it on purpose to get fired.
Who among us has not wanted to slap Sammy Guevara at least three times?
And I think everybody at least three times
want to
slap him. But yeah, he's just got a very slappable face. But
slappable face. I'm sure his newborn has slapped him in the face at least six times by now.
Yeah, but I don't know. But Andrade,
oh, Joe says Andrade's 5 years younger than Santos. I stand corrected, sir.
Joe's one of those. He's one of those dickheads that looks stuff up and like fact checks us. You know, which is
I stand corrected, but
transferring heat makes a good point that Santos also can speak English, which and he cuts really good promos in English. Santos does.
But he also says Triple H did push Andrade. He pushed him in NXT. Pushed in NXT, but everyone gets pushed in NXT, right? The problem with everybody getting pushed in NXT is, and everybody goes to the main roster, and you can't push everybody that gets a push in NXT. It doesn't work that way.
They get pushed and then they get brought up to the main roster. And like, so the next crop gets pushed in NXT to get to the main roster. But when you get to the main roster, you're not pushing anybody off the top. Those people are staying. Correct. Right? Those people ain't moving. So you're not going to get the same push that you had when you were on a smaller TV show, when you were in the developmental brand. That's just not going to happen because they have to push you eventually there. But once you get to the main roster, they don't have to, because they already have their group of people that they're pushing.
And here's the problem with Andrade. He's a malcontent. He's unhappy. Yeah. Maybe you have to push him to make Charlotte happy. But at the same time, I don't think he's got a lot of people there that love him. Because he got released the first time and nobody was like, oh, man, we got to get Banny back. You know? Yeah. He just seems like a dramatic
I think the guy that dude. Yeah, and his buddy, old Buddy Murphy, was the guy, like, they were, like, friends or whatever, and they got released together, and then they both went to AEW. So he's not, other than Charlie, he's not going back to a place that's kind of, like, begging to have him back, I don't think.
No.
Despite the fact he did have a really good run in NXT, I loved his run there.
Oh, it was fun. He had good match. Like, everyone has good matches. Everyone who's good had good matches in the Triple H or in NXT. But, like, tell me that great story or that great feud that he had. Like, he didn't. Like, Triple H just put matches together. He didn't do anything like really, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he had good matches, but I mean, like, it wasn't like he had like this epic story, like, you know, Johnny Gargano had or something like that, or Adam Cole. Like, he was there for a little bit and he moved up.
Yeah, he did. He did have a really good match with Gargano, but it wasn't like an extended feud. But I think they got 5 stars at one of their matches, which is pretty difficult for WWE match to get 5.
So. They're both great wrestlers. The problem with Andrade is he's a miserable human being.
Yeah. You know who actually put in a bid for Andrade before he went to AEW and actually matched the per date deal was TNA. So I think that could be interesting if they're trying to make some moves. Maybe they try to go for him because, you know, they went for Ospreay and they lost out. They went for CM Punk and lost out. Maybe they try to go for Andrade because, you know, I think he would be a star there. He would be like a guy that's like immediately at the top if they were to pick him up.
But is it worth it? See, the thing about TNA, that's the problem. They have a great locker room. Everybody's happy there. I don't know, they're happy with 200 people at their shows, but like, people are so generally happy there. They've done a good job cultivating a good locker room. You put Manny Andrade there, he's a miserable person. He's like Punk. He's like Punk.
Yeah.
He makes everybody around him miserable, and he's going to expect the promotion to be booked around him, and you're going to get great matches. You're going to get great matches with Josh and Andrade. You get great matches with those guys. But Dave also said that Andrade's rate is stupid expensive. It's insanely expensive. He said that Triple H paid more for him than Kenny Omega.
Which is mind-boggling. It is.
But
in Mexico, Andrade would be a bigger draw than Omega. In Mexico.
Sombra, was it? I mean, like, Yeah. Sombra was a good draw. I mean, like, I don't know. Is he really that big a draw in Mexico?
I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know about Mexican wrestling and Lucha Libre, but I think it's a safe assumption that he would be more important to a Mexican company than Kenny Omega would be.
You would think so, but who did Triple A keep with that mega title?
They don't give a fuck about that title.
But they didn't.
They just try to put it on people.
It's been on by Kingo for like a year and a half. So
yeah,
we can say that about. I mean, like for a long time, I would agree with you. But that title has been on the best worker in the company for the last 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
So, but that's my point. Is like if Andrade meant a lot to their business, wouldn't he be there more frequently?
Well, yeah. Two shows. Yeah. Well, he apparently not worth the money that he was asking.
Clearly. He ain't Psycho Clown.
Yeah,
that's I know this bothers
nobody's
American
psycho
fans.
Clown. Vikingo's not even psycho clown. That guy is true. Over Vikingo's like, crazy. Yeah,
no, for sure. But I mean, that's the thing though, is we assume all these guys go back and they're going to be huge draws. But Andrade wasn't a AAA guy to begin with, and AAA is different than CMLL, right? Yeah. They run different parts of the it's different. So I mean, like, I think we just assume because he was on WWE TV that he would mean something. He hadn't meant shit in AEW.
No. Well, he came in at a time where they had already had so many, you know, different WWE guys where he just kind of like where he came like right at the end of the pandemic where it was just like one after another, and he just really meant nothing. And I mean, he's had some really good matches. Don't get me wrong, but he never really caught fire in AEW. King of the North checking in on JD. JD hasn't lost his mind yet. Not yet. It's going to happen eventually.
It's coming.
Yeah.
I did praise a love story in a Godzilla movie for a good 20 minutes. So depending on your opinion of whether or not I've lost touch with reality, probably, you know, reflected there somewhere. I don't think this CMLL thing will be interesting because CMLL is on fire this year. They've been drawing really good houses. Mystico still means something as a draw. You know, Sabrano Jr. is really getting hot as a heel right now. Like they got
Tessa
something.
Blanchard is over there killing it. Lucha Doncic. Shout out Lucha Doncic. He's been on the Bring Tessa back to America train.
Did you read Dave's review of her match saying nobody cared? They said it would have gotten over in the US big time, but nobody in Arena Mexico gave a shit.
Yeah.
I thought that was absolutely hilarious.
CMLL is kind of carving out their niche for bringing in the canceled wrestlers because Flip Gordon, as King of the North just said, he's a full time guy now.
Is Flip canceled or is he just dumb?
I thought he wasn't canceled for any like abusive behavior, but during the pandemic people were pretty done with him because
he was the anti-vax guy or something like that.
Well, it's like one thing to be like not want to get the vaccine, it's like okay, that's your body, whatever, but he was like actively attacking people for wanting to get it.
Oh, he's that like, kind of asshole. Okay,
yeah. And for like wearing masks and stuff, like he was like going on Twitter. Yeah. So he was like one of those guys, you know. It's like
people were losing their minds during COVID.
I know, man. I know. A lot of people I lost a lot of respect for a lot of people during that time. And I didn't really care if they got the vaccine or not, but if they were like took a strong position and they wanted to demonize somebody else because their position was opposite, I was like, I'm not with you. I can't do it.
So I learned during COVID because of people like this, I learned the greatest thing on Facebook. Cause like on Twitter, I found that I've met a lot of people that I've had good conversations with. And I typically have good experiences on Twitter. On Facebook, I've learned to hate lifelong friends. So what I decided to do, cause I was getting miserable on looking at Facebook, I unfollowed every single person on Facebook. I don't follow anybody. I just follow brands, groups, and I post pictures of my kid and I don't interact with anybody.
Yeah.
And I my Facebook time was cut in like, it was cut by like 2/3. Right. And I don't see anybody's stupid bullshit because on Twitter, it's shorter and it's mostly wrestling or comic book curated from my end. And I don't have to read what my dumbass cousins think about anything or my dipshit sister. My sister's a complete dipshit, by the way. So, I mean, like,
shout out Jenny's sister.
She's a fucking moron, but I mean, like, it's just the best way to do it. Like, so if you Facebook friend request me, I'll accept, but I'm never going to see a single thing you write. I'll follow my wife and she don't post anything and she don't care. She knows my plan.
That's genius level stuff. All right. Lastly, before we get off here and before we head over to overtime, Brian Danielson has been accused of fining wrestlers for their social media activity. And somebody was saying that Mike Santana was one of those wrestlers, because he's another malcontent who's trying to get out of his contract, apparently. And apparently he's got 6 weeks left. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just a rumor that's out there. But you know what? Okay, look, if AEW is fining their wrestlers for being stupid on social media, about time.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they need to, you know, look, I get free speech and yada yada, but if you're going on there and I know they're independent contractors, right? But if they're actively going on there and bashing the company that they work for, I think you got to clamp down on that type of behavior. I say that knowing that a couple years ago, I was guilty of backing WWE wrestlers when they were coming out against their company because I didn't like WWE at the time. So now I'm being a complete hypocrite. So I'm going to go back in time and say WWE should have fined those guys too. So
no, I agree. And there's the thing is, like, you don't see a lot of those from WWE. Even when, like, I remember before Cody came, it's so much, man, before Cody came back and after Cody came back to WWE, it's like a different world of pro wrestling. But remember the Royal Rumble 2022? I remember Dave wrote, the morale has never been worse in this company, mm-hmm. right? But you didn't see them going on like Kevin Owens did the coordinates of Mount Rushmore, and that was like it, and that was like all you'd ever see. Like in AEW, you've got, like I said, Matt Hardy's going on there and bitching about his push. It's like, dude, you can't even walk. You haven't done a single cool thing since you've been here. Like, where do you get off like talking about anybody's stuff? Like, no, I'm kind of with. And here's the funny part is the people that are bitching about Danielson handing out fines are the same people that masturbate over old Undertaker wrestlers court stories. Yeah, that's when men were tough, you know, idiots.
Yeah, well, here's my problem with it. Why is Danielson even being mentioned? He's just part of like a committee of people. The fines are coming from Tony Khan. Tony Khan. Put the blame on Khan. Don't put the blame. Like, Danielson's not the one, like, here's your fine, right? Like Bob Armstrong used to do in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, you know, on TV. You've been fined $500. That's what he always tell fucking
Bill Watts would do in real life.
Yeah.
You're playing cards backstage. That's $400. So,
that's my problem with it. And I think Khan needs to get out ahead of that, right? Because like one of his top stars is taking the blame and taking the heat for all this stuff. Khan needs to come out like, no, I'm the one. I consult with people. I get people's opinions. I'm finding these fucking idiots, right? I'm doing it. I fired CM Punk. Not Danielson. Like, I'm doing all of this. Stop coming out.
He did. He went on television and said, I fired CM Punk. I don't know what more he could have done for that. You know?
I know, but then it came out afterwards, and now people are blaming Brian Danielson. He just needs to make sure, like, to reiterate, like, I'm the only fucker that makes a decision around here. Nobody else makes any decisions but me.
Here's what's funny is for years we said Tony's got to delegate more. So Kevin Sullivan gets fired because Mastery's like, look, we're going to move in a different direction. And it's like, and people are like, why didn't Tony Khan do anything? And it's like, didn't you tell him to delegate? Like, he's letting, that guy's in charge of TV. He should be in charge of TV. And Tony just signs off on it. Okay. That's what you want to do. Go do it. Like,
yeah,
that's
but, how I mean, but yeah. But decisions are made, you know, ultimate decisions, like, especially with talent, comes from the boss, right? You don't want like another talent taking the heat for that. You be the one to take the heat for it.
Yeah, but it's easier to give the heat to the guy than the boss, right? It's like Vince loved me. This Richard hated me.
And he's putting himself in like a Vince type position, right? And that's kind of the way I see it. Like, oh yeah, Vince loved me, but Bruce Pritchard fucking hated me, or Jim Ross hated me and fired my ass and fined me. It's like, no, everything, it was Vince. It was always Vince. And it's the same situation here.
Mike, what's the through line with that? Wrestlers, they're dumb.
Yeah. They are.
Like, they're just dumb. Like they're easy to work. Like, it's just, I'm sorry, but it's the truth. And if you're going to get mad at Brian, if you're going to get mad at someone, like, Tony Khan's being an adult in this situation, I give him, I believe no one's been harder on his leadership than you or I. He's doing this here, and Brian Danielson is heading up this disciplinary committee, and he gets to be the guy, the hatchet guy, right? Because I don't think Tony's got an end to be the hatchet guy. So if you can't be the hatchet guy, have someone else be the hatchet guy. It's weird that it's Brian, but I mean, like, I think Brian's respected enough. And I think Brian's respected enough in the locker room for that. If Brian goes, look, I'm going to have to fine you, I think everybody like, fine. Yeah. Okay. Like that guy, you know, I think if it's like the boys, we lost her. And I said, I'm disappointed in you. And they were all like, oh, like, I think it's like one of those things where imagine if Punk had that job, people would be like, fuck you. You know, like,
Yeah.
They'd be
yeah,
acting like Joey Janela on Twitter, like when he's pretending like what he did in AEW mattered.
Ah, man. Don't even fucking talk about that guy. I had forgotten all about Joey Janela, that he was actually a thing in AEW at one point.
He wasn't ever really a thing in AEW. Like, he was just kind of there. Remember when everybody was convinced that Joey Janela was good? Because, like, he booked, like, kind of fun indie shows that first couple years. And people were like, Joey Janela is really good. And I saw him in All In, and he had a decent match with Hangman Page. Because Hangman Page has great matches with everybody.
Yeah, he had a good match with Kenny Omega, newsflash.
Kenny Omega also has good matches with everybody. Kenny Omega had the greatest squash match ever with Sonny Kiss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But hey, guys, I think that's going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD show. Stay tuned next week. We'll be back on Thursday night, hopefully. Hopefully my balls will allow it. But we should be back on Thursday night. And head over to patreon.com/themikeandjdshow. JD and I are getting ready to lay down some audio talking about the history of Sting and Ric Flair, because we got Sting's final match coming up. And so JD and I are big fans of NWA in the 80s and 90s. So we're just going to kind of talk about some of our favorite memories and favorite matches and kind of go through the history of these two guys and kind of riff on that. So we're going to talk about that because they got that big match coming up in Greensboro this coming up February. So that was fresh on our minds. So stay tuned for that. And then I'll also be back two times this weekend with Brace for Impact. So I'll record Brace for Impact at some point tomorrow morning. And then another one probably on Sunday, as I'll be recapping a final resolution. But I'll talk about tomorrow. I'm going to talk about all about the news surrounding TNA, Okada, Will Ospreay. And then, of course, they just got their new TNA Plus streaming services coming out next month, which, surprise, surprise, everybody, that it is actually a part of the Endeavor streaming network. Endeavor, which owns WWE and UFC, is actually going to be hosting on their servers the new TNA Plus streaming app. So I think that's kind of interesting and a little bit wild.
Endeavor,
so
don't care about those things.
They don't. Like, this whole, like, WWE smashing competition is no more. It's like a thing of the past. They don't give a shit. So that's pretty interesting to me. But yeah, lots of stuff to talk about with TNA coming up this week, and hopefully I have a good update on the ticket sales and all of that, and more news and all kinds of stuff coming up. So please stay tuned, and then make sure you're a subscriber to this channel, the Voices of Wrestling YouTube Network. Give us a big thumbs up and share it with your friends. All right, everybody. And until next time. Oh no. Sorry, my mouse just froze. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain from the
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.